You're listening to Around Comics, episode 135. Comic Book Roundtable, where twice a week you'll hear a revolving panel of guests discuss comic books and graphic novels.
How much we love comics!
How much we love comics. On every Thursday episode, just like this one, you'll hear either topic discussions, creator interviews, Comics 101, or creator spotlights.
Not for long.
Changes are coming. Today we're talking with up-and-coming artist from Down Under, Nicholas Scott. And I stopped for no reason.
Okay.
I'm Chris Trenini. But you had to go to the grocery store real quick.
Oh, I'm Chris Trenaseman. Let me introduce the rest of today's panel. Join us from opposing sides of the comic book universe are DC
War.
Exclusive artist, Mr. Mike Norton.
Hi.
And Marvel exclusive artist, Mr. Scotty Young.
I love
comic
stuff.
I love Marvel comics.
You know, I like comics because they're on like paper and
they're colored.
Yes, there's like all like the spectrum, man. Have you ever thought about the spectrum?
I can put it on both sides.
I mean, paper has two sides. You can do that.
I called Vince to see if we could re-record, and he said it was gold.
Yeah, of course it was gold.
Yeah.
Anytime you catch a moment of retarded magic in a bottle, you can't open the cork. You gotta keep it.
Yeah, I left my mark on that show, didn't I?
On their final
show.
If
anyone out there hasn't listened to Bullpen Bolton's last episode, it's episode 33, I believe.
Yeah.
Chris was on there, and it was after a long day of drinking, so it's definitely worth the download.
I love fans of Bullpen Bulletins tune in for their very last Bullpen Bulletins episode.
To be dominated.
to be just fucking shit hammered by Chris. Like calling Vince and David old.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to hearing the conversation for the first time.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Mr. Tom Caters is joining us as well.
I am a force of nature like Rick Remender, according to Chris.
And the other force of nature on the panel is Mr. Brian Salazar.
I used to buy my comics at the grocery store years ago because I'm old. Grocery store.
But now you can buy your comic books at In-Stock Trade.
Not moving on.
No!
This episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Sorry, Tom. I didn't realize your name was there. My apologies, sir. Please continue.
Please continue.
I love InStockTrades. Waiting for the trade's never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, essentials, archives, essentials, absolute editions, essentials, omnibus editions, essentials, and more. All at a great discount price. And remember that all orders are over $50 ship free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition, an essential, or catching up with showcases, essentials, and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
And they'll call a cab whenever you need one.
Yeah. You did.
Or that
good thing you were home.
They'll fucking take you to rehab.
Do. Check you in.
Yeah, they'll check you in.
I feel much better now.
Yeah.
And Around Comics is recorded every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles. It's located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you. We're at our new table now.
Yeah, it's five feet away from the old.
I can touch the area.
we're around the corner behind the back issues.
Yeah,
so
we're hidden.
It's just as awkward to come here and watch us.
Yes.
It has not become more comfortable for you if you bring your girlfriend.
Which we've never seen that couple again. Never to return.
We saw them in Chicago.
Chicago, yeah.
Hey guys, what's up, Mike?
And girlfriend.
Wendy,
Heidi,
Shelly,
I don't remember.
We got nothing.
Yeah, I talked to her for a while. I was kind of drunk.
She was a teacher.
I think I hit on her at one point.
Were you a force of nature?
I was a force of nature in the bar.
Listen, I used to pick up girls at the grocery store.
I used to date girls as young as you.
We used to go to Hucks.
Not anymore, though.
Did you guys have Hucks where you grew up?
Hucks?
Convenience stores? No Hucks?
Never saw Hucks.
Never heard
That's
of
actually where I used to buy some comics.
It's a grocery store.
All right, well, whether you know her work from Star Wars, various Buffyverse titles, or the current, or as the current artist for DC's Birds of Prey series, there's no denying that Nicola Scott is a rising star in comics. And Around Comics is happy to welcome Nicola Scott to the show.
We can only hope she'll be as shit-ass hammered as you were.
I don't think it's possible. Nicola, welcome to the show. Thanks for being on Around Comics.
Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you. How is everything down under right now?
It's pretty sunny. The future is sunny.
You are in the future.
It's Saturday lunchtime. It's like 20 to 1 in the afternoon on Saturday.
Okay. Blowing my mind with that kind
of
thing.
How is my breakfast tomorrow?
Yeah. It was delicious.
Nice.
Do you they made me a special at the cafe.
Do you have any hot stock tips?
No, I don't really follow the stock. Sorry.
You know she's going, these fucking geeks. Just ask me the questions, geeks.
Well, you're back home in Sydney. You've taken a week away from home. Last week was the APEC Summit?
APEC Summit, yeah. It's the Asia-Pacific Economic something or other.
X-Men.
Conference. And it was, it was crazy. There were like bomber jets flying over the house every 5 minutes.
Yeah, you had some of the most important world leaders were in Sydney for the week, including...
Yeah, it was pretty horrifying.
Yeah.
Did you guys see anything on the news there about a bunch of Australian comedians getting through security?
No.
I did hear about that. It was on the radio that I heard, some radio show I heard that.
Were you one of them?
It was pretty funny.
Were you
one of them? No, I was driving out of town at the time. But I was laughing.
Nice. Well, speaking of Australia, you are obviously a comic book artist that lives there. And I wanted to start with that. How does working in Australia for what is, you know, mostly an American market and an American medium, how do you deal with a lot of the problems of being, you know, an ocean away from, you know, the home office?
Right. Kind of logistically, it's not really a problem. Like, I do pretty much all of my corresponding online through the internet, and I FedEx everything off to them that they need hard copies of, and it really, I don't really feel that disconnected when it comes to doing the work itself, because it's such solitary work anyway. But the thing that makes it kind of tricky being this far away is all that sort of general incidental FaceTime that you miss out on. Like, you know, if you live in the States, like, Scotty, how many conventions do you do a year, generally?
Up until this year, I was doing 10 a year for three or 4 years.
Quite a lot of opportunities to just
be awesome.
Have, like, social interaction with other creators and such.
Yeah.
And I go to one convention a year, and it's San Diego. So it's like the biggest fucking one there, and you've got hundreds of thousands of people to compete with. And I'm trying to sort of get FaceTime with as many people, and for no reason other than to just meet people.
Right.
And because I only get that one chance a year, it's so overwhelming that I don't even know who I'm meeting half the time. Like, is Mike Norton there now?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
There was a couple of times at San Diego this year that Mike was hanging out with Sean McKeever a couple of times, and I had gone for dinner with Sean on my first night there. And so when we'd see him around, you know, it was sort of like, hi, we'd have a chat about this, that, and the other. And a couple of times Mike was there, and I was introduced to Mike. And it was not until on the way home that I said to my husband, now, who's that mic guy that we were chatting with?
I knew it. I knew you didn't know who I was.
And my husband said, oh, that was Mike Norton. And I went, what? That was fucking Mike Norton. Jesus Christ, how did I not know that?
I knew it. I knew it.
That's kind of what it's like. Because I have no idea who I'm talking to. Because everyone kind of knows each other. Even if they've never met each other, they've got an idea of what each other look like.
Right.
All that kind of stuff. And I just don't have any of that context. So, very first meetings I ever had when I first tried getting into the industry, I had a meeting set up for me by Mark Millar, who I'd met out here at an Australian convention. And I said, you know, I want to break into American comics. And I was heading over to San Diego that year, and it was like 2003 or something. And he said, I'll set up a meeting for you. And he set up a meeting for me with Joe Quesada. And I had to do some homework to find out who Joe Quesada was, because I just had no concept of who anybody was, because I was very, very raw when I got into the industry. I had no idea about anything to do with it. I thought Marvel and DC were the only companies, and I'd kind of heard of Dark Horse.
Wow. Can you give us a little history lesson on how you did get into the industry, and what sort of was your interest in comics, and how did that lead into working in the industry?
Well, my interest in comics kind of came really late. I didn't even know comic books really existed I didn't know they were the source material. Like, I sort of grew up on superheroes from TV shows and film, and so I kind of fell in love with superheroes as a concept. And so, you know, I was watching the old Batman reruns, and I was, you know, engrossed in the Wonder Woman TV show, and I had the Superman films, and I got really into superheroes through that. And when I would see the odd comic book around, it was either Marvel, and I just had no concept of who the characters were, or I would find something with Wonder Woman in it or Superman in it, but it was so different from the films or the TV shows that I was used to, that I thought it was inferior. I didn't realize it was the source material. And it wasn't until sort of like my late teens when I sort of would find myself hanging out with a couple of geeky guys, and they were into comic books, and they just sort of exposed me to what comic books actually were. And it was in that sort of mid-late 80s period where, like, the first comic book that I actually read was The Dark Knight Returns. It was handed to me. They said, you should read this. And I did, and it blew my mind. My brain just went, you know, out the back of my head. And I sort of started realizing that there's this whole industry built around these characters, and that it's a lot bigger than I thought it was, and that it is actually where the source material is. That is the source material. And so I kind of... that was when I first became really aware of comic books, and I was like 17 at this point. And even then, I just wasn't really exposed to them on a regular basis. You know, I'd go into a comic shop when I'd come across one, and it would be so exciting to see all these sort of superhero stuff everywhere, but it was so sort of overwhelming. The continuity business and all the different characters, it was just more than I was prepared to invest in. And I didn't have many people around me who were kind of into it too. I didn't, you know, none of my girlfriends were into it, and I didn't know that many guys that were into it. But I like drawing characters, because I'd sort of grown up drawing. My mother is an artist and my grandmother is an artist, so it was kind of in our nature to be sort of drawing on a regular basis. But, it wasn't until, like, I don't know, late 90s that I started sort of paying a little more attention to comic books. I think it was around about the time that Kingdom Come came out. I go into a comic book shop a little more often, and I picked up a few more things, and I wasn't picking up any particular titles, just stuff. Anything that I liked the art on was what I'd pick up. And I'd feel really uncomfortable being in a comic shop, not because I was made to feel uncomfortable. I just felt like a bit of a fraud being in there, because I thought, oh, I might do this one day. But everyone there seemed to know everything about everything, you know, all the characters, all the creators, all the industry beers, and I just didn't know anything. So I kind of, I shied away from it all the time, and it wasn't until, like, 2002 when I was sort of having my own general, what am I doing with my life meltdown, that I sort of went through all the different things that, that I can do or that I have done or that I like doing, trying to find something that I could see myself being happy doing for the rest of my life. And I literally spent a weekend just sitting there thinking, what the fuck am I going to do? And the idea of drawing, being an illustrator, I'd sort of worked as a professional illustrator before doing this, that, and the other, and I kind of found it really unsatisfying. And so I'd always dismissed that as a career option. But here I was faced with sort of the limits of what I could choose from. And I just sort of thought, look, I should really consider that, but I really hated being a commercial illustrator. What else can I do with that? What do I like drawing? And literally in the space of a second, I thought, I like drawing comics. I like drawing superheroes. There are people that get paid to draw superheroes. That could be a career. Oh, that's what I'm going to do. And that was it. And literally I jumped in the car. I went in to the nearest comic book shop. I bought $150 worth of comics, just anything that I liked the art on. And that was my sort of deciding moment. That was it, what I was going to do. And within a couple of months, I'd sold my car and I'd moved out of my pretty expensive apartment. And I was in the process of moving out of the position that I was in at work. I was managing restaurants at the time and doing pretty well at it. And it was a lot of fun, but it was not what I wanted to be doing in 10 years' time or 20 years' time. And so I sort of got out of the management position and I took up sort of just waiting on tables, sort of things that were less commitment and hopefully less hours.
Yep,
and
that was me.
I just sort of started drawing.
You're the
and
female version of Scotty.
I waited tables for 7 years before I started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. I'd had like a mini career at acting. That was the one thing that I really wanted to do when I was growing up was be an actor. But, you know, if you've met any real-life actors before, they're kind of small people.
They're tiny.
They're tiny with big heads. And like, I've got a big head, but I'm huge. I'm like nearly 6 foot tall. And I'm not like a skinny rake 6 foot tall. I'm like a big girl 6 foot tall. And acting was just never happening. I did like a lot of advertising in the 90s.
Well, didn't you try out for a Wonder Woman role?
How do you know this?
I researched.
I researched and found that out. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you would.
Ah, James Lloyd. Yeah, I did. In 98, it was after the producers of Lois and Clark, once the Lois and Clark TV show had wrapped up and ended, they, you know, it was such a success that they thought, let's do that all over again with the next character we would choose is Wonder Woman. And so they did an outline and they had developed it and they got round to the casting stage. And I found out about this through like the gossip column of the newspaper here. And I thought, fucking what? And at the time I was, you know, I was quite a bit younger than I am now. And I was a bit of a gym bunny, so I was pretty buff. And I had a really good outfit that I had made for a fancy dress party. And so
for a formal occasion.
I called my agent and I said, have you heard anything about this? And they went, no. And so I rang up Warner Brothers here and I said, have you heard anything about this? And they went, no. And so I just sort of did all this ringing around and I finally got through to casting, Warner Brothers TV casting. And for whatever reason, I think because I was calling from overseas, they put me through to the director of casting. And I just sort of said, I'm just an actress who lives in Australia. What do I do to audition for this show? And she said, look, just send us some photographs first. So I sent her my headshot and my bio, and I sent a couple of photographs of me in the outfit. And she called me up, like, within 24 hours and said, we just got your photograph. I'm FedExing you a script. And so I started the audition process in Australia. And as far as I know, like, this is, I was sort of getting information from her, and I was getting information from, like, the gossip column of the newspaper and from the different, you know, sort of magazines, entertainment magazines, sort of trying to track what was happening with the audition process, because I was doing it all from over here. I wasn't really sort of seeing anyone face to face. And the last I heard, I was sort of down to the final round, and it was between me and a chick from Baywatch and possibly somebody else, and they had said to me, you know, how quickly can you get here if we need you to get here? And I said, I'll be there tomorrow, you know, put me on the first flight. And I thought, all I need to do is dye my hair black and I'll be right. And I was auditioning with, like, scenes from the pilot, and it was so awful. It was really kind of wet and cheesy and foul. It was kind of like the Lois and Clark show, in that it was about the relationship she had with Steve Trevor, but Steve Trevor was such a pussy, and she just seemed like such a... She seemed so sort of stupid to the fact that he was, a bit of a wet blanket, and it was just...
It's staying true to the source material.
It was awful, but I thought, I don't give a shit. You know, I'm going to get paid to run around for 5 years in knee-high boots. Awesome. But it didn't happen. They flaked on the show. And as far as I know, I heard this sort of only about 3 years ago, but the producers of that, the production company kind of evolved. They dumped it because it was just sort of not going where they wanted it to go. But I think they ended up going back to the drawing board with Superman, and I think that's where Smallville came from.
Mm-hmm. So when do you hear?
They just sort of...
When do you hear if you got the role?
When do I hear?
Yeah.
Well, if they call me now, I'm going to have to say, okay, I need 6 months of serious working out, because I've been sitting on my ass for the last 4 years.
Well, good luck.
Back to the comic side of things, when you thought you wanted to do comics, did you just have a desire just to draw comics, or then or even now, did you ever have the desire to want to do your own, create your own material, or tell stories, or was it just about having fun, excuse me, drawing?
Right. Well, when the decision was made, I knew so little about the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the decision was really based on what am I going to do to support myself, rather than I need a creative outlet. And it wasn't until I was kind of in the industry for quite a while that and doing a lot of indie stuff that I started realizing that I was enjoying it quite a lot, just sort of working on sort of original product. You know, it wasn't my original product. It was you know, I'd sort of be approached by writers to work on, you know, a new little indie something or other, or something I had already got a publishing deal, and I find myself working on it, and I just sort of really enjoyed sort of being able to design characters and design the world that they're in and that kind of thing. And so it's only really been in the last couple of years that I've thought, I should sort of really think more about what I might like to do creatively, because I did have this goal when I first got in. I want to work for DC, just because that was the company with the characters that I knew. But just sort of the process of being in the industry and being exposed to how big it is and how many options there are and the different kind of stuff being published, it's sort of the superhero stuff hasn't lost its luster to me, because that's kind of a bit of a passion for me. But it sort of certainly made me more aware of what I could do in future. And I'm figuring, okay, now that I'm on the path that I was aiming for, I figure I should sort of stay here and milk it and get as much out of it as I can. And when I've got a bit more of a name behind me, and I've got a certain idea of some original stuff that I want to follow through on, mm-hmm. that's when I'll start doing that.
Cool.
But at the moment, I'm just sort of, I'm kind of really happy to be making money again. I literally spent, you know, a good, like, 3 or 4 years, I spent 3 years living out of a suitcase and 4 years living off, like, kind of hand to mouth, you know, just sort of, I spent all of my savings trying to sort of support myself getting into this industry. And now that I'm making some money again, it's like, fuck that, I just want to make some money for a while.
Right.
And eat well again, and buy some clothes, and travel a bit. And it's kind of nice. So I think I'll stick with this for a while, and I'm still learning. You know, I've only been doing, Birds of Prey is the first monthly book that I've ever worked on. So, I'm just sort of kind of having fun with having that regular steady stream of income and work to do.
Right.
And being able to sort of really spend some decent time with some characters, sure, rather than just an issue or two.
Now, had you spent some time over here in the States, kind of getting your career going, or have you kind of been in Australia the entire time?
Working or living?
No, I came over to the States in 2003, with the idea of just trying to stay. You know, I'd literally sold pretty much everything I owned, and what I wasn't prepared to sell, I'd put in storage, and that was when the living out of a suitcase thing started. And I just figured, you know, I'll just sort of go over there. And at the time, I had no experience. I'd done a cover and a 8-page backup story for a small Australian comic book, and that was it. And I figured, you know, somewhere in my past had said this motto: if you want to be a fisherman, you go where the fish are. And I just sort of figured, okay, if I want to go and work in superhero comics, I have to go where the superhero comics are, and that was New York. And so I'd been to New York quite a few times sort of through my life at the point, and I was, you know, having an excuse to legitimately be there for a long period of time was really appealing. And I was in New York for about a year and a half, and I spent the whole time working to managing this sort of low-budget hotel in downtown New York, and working as a manager at a bar a couple of nights a week, and drawing through the middle of the night, just anything that came my way. As long as it was being published, I didn't care if I was getting paid. As long as it was going to get published, because I really needed to build up a body of published work, because I didn't have anything. Then I was happy to do it, and I sort of spent that year and a half sleeping about 3 hours a day, and that was usually between the hours of 3 and 7 in the afternoon.
That's prime sleeping time.
Yeah.
That's where I like to get my rest.
Right.
Well, the great thing about it was that it left me awake and drawing while Adult Swim was on the Cartoon Network, and I love that, so that sort of kept me going during the middle of the night.
Did you ever start losing your mind?
I did that for a year and a half, and it kind of killed me a bit, but it was fun.
And now, you're sort of a bit of a product of the internet, from what I could tell. Sort of, you started putting your work out on different forums, message boards, that kind of thing. I think I read an interview with Gail, where she was Gail Simone talking about you. This was, I think, a couple years ago, and she had said that you started putting stuff online and people were taking notice of it, and then it was sort of just like a waiting game. People were just sort of waiting to see
when is this person going to get work?
Yeah, when were you going to get scooped up? Is that pretty accurate, or was there? Was it?
Yeah, I think sort of being so far away, you know, the internet has really helped for me, because I don't get that opportunity to go to conventions on a regular basis in the States. To start off with, just to sort of you know, amongst my peers, I was on the Millerworld forums, Mark Millar's forum in the creative section. There was just sort of, when I was starting out, there was a nice little creative boom happening in the creative forum there, and I was just sort of posting stuff there for feedback and ideas. And there were at the time, this is when the boards were quite new, and there were quite a few sort of big name creators lurking around there, and occasionally one of them would get on there and they'd post something, or they'd send me a PM and say, you know, what's your story? What have you been doing? What have you worked on? What have you got coming up? You know, I sort of got little notes from Warren Ellis and from Mark Millar and from, you know, a few other people, and half the people I didn't know who they were. I'd have to sort of say, now, who's this person? To, you know, my buddies here. And they'd just laugh at me and say, oh, it's like the editor-in-chief of so-and-so company. And I'd be like, oh, shit. But the turning point for me was really this guy who had known my work, just sort of like a regular guy who had seen my work on Millerworld and seen my work at a couple of other places, had been telling me I should post my work on ComicBoc on Geoff Johns' forum. And the first time he'd said I should go there and post some artwork, I went on to the site, and there was only one forum that was kind of really appropriate for posting artwork, and it was called a critique forum. And at the time, most of the people that were posting on there were kind of kids. And at the time, I had sort of, you know, some reasonably big-time work published. I'd been working for Dark Horse by that stage on their Star Wars titles and a couple of things for Image. And I just sort of, I didn't think it was an appropriate forum for me to be posting artwork on because it was sort of like a real beginner's forum. And I just sort of, I didn't feel like sort of being bombastic and arriving and saying, hey, look at my work, I'm so cool. And so I didn't. And every now and then this guy would sort of send me an email, this guy, Brian LaBelle, would send me this email saying, you know, you should post some work on ComicBoc. Come on, post some work on ComicBoc. And eventually he talked me around and he said, just post some Wonder Woman pictures. There are some Wonder Woman fans there. They'll love it. And so I did post some artwork on there, and I just sort of made it just from Wonder Woman pictures, and I said that I'm kind of semi-pro, and, you know, but I hear there are some Wonder Woman fans here, you know, here's some of my Wonder Woman pictures. And it was that forum that just went off. Mike Andreyko saw it and commented and was sending me private messages, and this is kind of round about the time that Manhunter was starting up, and saying, you know, what do you do, what's your story, what's your background? Gail Simone sort of discovered me there, Greg Ruckus discovered me there, and he's been, like, advocating for me ever since, trying to get me work at DC. Since then, he was, you know, some of the pages that I posted on there were pages from, sequential pages from his script, his Wonder Woman script. And he was just sort of, he was so jazzed about it, he was trying to get me on the end of his run. But, you know, at the time, I had very little experience behind me, and while I was on the DC radar, they sort of, I wasn't ready yet, you know, particularly for one of their sort of iconic character titles, and it sort of really exploded for me, and that sort of got me an interview with Wizard, which was like, that was totally, you know, weird, to suddenly have Wizard knocking on the door saying, can we do a piece about you because you're on the internet? And I'm like, everyone's on the internet. Why the fuck are you picking on me? But that really helped, because when I finally got the job at DC, they said, yeah, we saw your thing in Wizard, and yeah, we've seen you for the last few years here, and yeah, we trust you now. How do you feel about working on Birds of Prey? And I was like, oh, ding.
Well, I mean, you had done some stuff for Dark Horse with some of the Star Wars titles, and you had done some Buffyverse. You had done some Angel work. So
Angel, I've worked with Peter David on a couple of books. The Illyria, they did a series of one shots, Angel one shots, and they were like spotlight on the
support
characters.
Oh yeah, that's right. I did one of those,
and I did one on Illyria, which was like the character that. Demigod character that Fred became in season 5.
She's awesome.
Spoilers.
She's fucking
awesome. She is
awesome. Fucking
so
awesome.
So I did that one, and I did a Spike versus Dracula issue, which was sort of a bit of a rush job, but it was quite a bit of fun to do.
Hello, I'm Kieran Gillen, writer of Phonogram, and, well, just Phonogram. You're listening to Around Comics.
Well, you know, we were talking about the internet and how it's kind of created or brought some talent into the industry. One of the collaborators that you're working with now, or just finished working with, Gail Simone, really got her start on the internet. What was it like to? And I guess we can compare notes here with Mike. What's it been like to work with Gail Simone?
It's actually been really great. You know, I've sort of been aware of her writing for quite a while. And I've only just, in the last couple of years, been buying books for the stories rather than for the art. I'm starting to sort of get to know the characters. You know, if I find out through people that this particular series or this particular trade is a great character development storyline for so-and-so character, then I go back and read it. And I'd sort of become aware of Gail Simone through one of her Birds of Prey arcs that was about Black Canary. And Black Canary was a character at the time that I didn't really get. And so I'd sort of gone and read that, and I thought it was a lot of fun. And so when she commented on my stuff on Comic Block, that was like a total buzz. And I was thinking, oh, awesome. And she's the writer of one of the books that I thought I would be right for. And I met her at a convention last year in April at Paradise Con in Toronto. And she and I sort of chatted a few times, and we got along really well. We sort of seemed to be see eye to eye on just sort of the non-comic topics that we were discussing, you know, in a group. We just sort of find ourselves sort of agreeing on things. And a few months later, when I was back there for San Diego, and I sort of bumped into Gail, and I said, you know, hi, how's it going? And she said, great, you know, how are you doing? You know, because at the time I was shuffling myself around, and I was like, oh, yeah, you know, same old, same old. And she came running up to me the next day and said, you need to go and meet my editor. And I was like, whoa, why? And she said, because there might be something coming up. And that was how the Birds of Prey thing came about. And so when I started working on her script, it was like I was totally sort of jazzed that I was finally working on a monthly book, and I was terrified that I was finally working on a monthly book because I didn't know if I'd be able to keep up. And I was completely jazzed that I was working for DC because that was kind of like the goal that I had set myself right at the beginning when I didn't know anything. And the fact that I was working with Gail, who was someone that I'd met and I felt like I got along well with, and working on a title that I thought I would be really appropriate for, and getting to start on issue 100, I was so fucking overwhelmed by how cool it all was that it took me like a couple of issues to just sort of calm down and get into it and start sort of asking more questions about, you know, what people wanted from me, you know, or just sort of feeling game to make suggestions and stuff. And I actually found her extremely fun and easy to collaborate with. And half the questions I'd have for her are like, what's so-and-so wearing in this scene? And she'd just sort of laugh at me at some of the suggestions I come up with. You know, can I stick so-and-so in a hat? And she'd just go, no. Or, that's hilarious. Yeah, do that. And I don't know, I find her script sort of really good fun to work on because there's always wacky characters popping up. The dialogue is so funny that it gives me great opportunity to do sort of, you know, pretty wacky faces on people. Able to work on a superhero book, and this is kind of the first real superhero book that I've worked on. And it, to be a girl power book is kind of amusing, and for it to have so many characters in it and to be so funny and have such a good following, and to be able to work with Gail, because I just love the way she writes. She writes sort of some funny shit.
Yes,
and I get to draw it, which is a total buzz.
Did you ask her if there was any way that you could get Blue Beetle worked into the book?
If I could get Blue Beetle worked into it?
Yeah. Well, that's
a bit late now, isn't he dead?
Whoa!
Are we talking about the new one?
That didn't stop me from asking.
I find it interesting you guys met on neutral ground in Canada. Do you think that was any sort of, did that help ease any sort of tension that might have led, that you were in a non-aligned country?
But what
really did help was the fact that I was a guest at this convention with her, and like all these big name creators were there as guests and me. And it was like, you know, this convention in Canada, it's called Paradise Con, and it's a smallish convention, but it's just comic books. It's not sort of all the other paraphernalia. And they have a really decent-sized guest list because they're only flying people up from New York or LA or wherever. It's not that far to fly people. And then they fly me from Australia and put me up for a week. And I'm like a nobody. But they wanted to bring me over, which was totally, it was a bit amazing. When they first invited me over, they said, would you like to come to this? They were doing a Women of Comics symposium, so I think they were kind of rounding up as many women as they could find who were working in comics. And when they first contacted me, I sort of got back to them saying, yeah, that's really nice. Do you realize I'm in Australia? And they got back to me saying, no, we didn't. But
we can't take it back
and
now.
There goes the budget. I said, do you realize I'm in Australia? Would you like to think about it some more and maybe invite me later? But they got back to me saying, no, we still want you to come. So they flew me over and they put me up for a week. And that really helped with the neutral ground thing, sort of being a guest.
I live in Antarctica.
All these other really big name guests. And I could kind of pretend to blend in.
Nice.
Mike has a question.
But he's in Nashville.
I didn't know how to broach this subject because Gail wanted me to tell you that she thinks it's barbaric and wrong to eat horses. And every time that she sees
them, I eat horses.
Yeah, and she.
Yeah, we went out for dinner. We went back to Paradise.
I knew there had to be a story behind this because
in June.
She told me to tell you this. Okay,
John
go ahead.
Yelke took us out for dinner, took Gail and her husband and I out for dinner on the last night of the convention. And we went to this sort of little French restaurant. And there was a horse on the menu. And I just, it's like, what? What the fuck? I've never seen a horse on a menu ever anywhere.
I gotta have it!
And I said to everyone, have you ever seen a horse on the menu? And they went, no. And I said to the waitress when she sort of came to take our order, I said, now, tell me about the horse. What's the horse?
What's his name? He's out back.
It's like a really rich red meat steak. And I said,
horse is delicious.
I've had red meat for ages. Hit me with it. I'll have the horse. And it came out. It was huge. It was like big.
A Shetland pony.
Piece of red meat with sauce and all kinds of business. And Gail's husband was just laughing his ass off.
Wow.
He'd gone for like a meat platter that looked like a Barbie meat platter next to this horse steak. That I was about to hoe into. But it was really yummy. It was great. I'd eat horse again.
Well, she told me she's afraid. I mean, every time she sees a My Little Pony, she's afraid you're going to slather in barbecue sauce and go to town on it.
Tasty. Yeah. It was really good.
Was this a French-Canadian restaurant?
It just said it was a French restaurant, so I just sort of went with it.
Was it in Canada?
Yeah, it was in Toronto.
Yeah, it's French Canadian.
Well, let's get back. Let's go back to Birds of Prey a little bit. Now, after you run on Birds with Gail, now you're getting a new writer. Were you surprised? I guess he's a hack. He's Sean McKeever. Were you?
No,
I don't want to say surprised at all, but were you? A little surprised that because a lot of times when they're going to make a change on a writer, they have a new artist and that kind of thing, but obviously that's not the case here. You're staying with the book, which is great.
Yeah.
But were you surprised at all that happened, or
that I got to stay on the book?
Yeah.
I kind of have been keeping my mouth shut.
You've known for a long time.
I've been getting along really well with my editor, Mike Carlin. He and I sort of have been communicating really well together, and This is another thing about being so far away is I have no real concept of how I'm doing. I get emails back from him when he gets the art pages saying, yep, that's great, keep them coming. And, I think it's kind of in an editor's nature to just be hounding everybody for their work, It's like that's sort of a major part of an editor's job is to just hassle everyone to get their stuff in, and so I've sort of been getting that from him, but not in any sort of direct way. Just sort of that's been the general vibe, but also kind of cheery and happy. But it wasn't until I was in San Diego this year, and we were hanging out a bit, and I saw him out of the office, that he said to me, "This is like the first time in like ever that we've had 11 issues in a row by the same artist on Birds of Prey." And I was like, really? And he said, yeah, for like years, since Ed Bennis, we haven't had the same artist on for more than 3 issues. And so he was totally jazzed about that, and he was jazzed that I was keeping up with the pace, and it was the first time that I sort of felt like, okay, I've been keeping up, and that's really good, and he wants me to stay on just because I'm keeping up, and he and I get along well together, and I think I am a kind of good fit for the book, so I'm just sort of staying on it until they kick me off, or he seems to think that I'm about to be poached for something else. I don't think anything in particular, but he keeps saying, you know, something big is going to come along, and I'm going to try and keep you on Birds of Prey unless it's something
Wonder Woman
something worthy. Well, I think that's kind of what he was indicating, but you know, they've got the Dodsons on there, and you know,
yeah, but they don't last long on anything.
Well, they're pretty good for Wonder Woman. I think they're a good match for Wonder Woman.
Well, I mean, obviously, when it was announced Gail was going to take over Wonder Woman, I initially thought that you would, you know, obviously be a fit for that and working with Gail and everything. And I know you're a huge Wonder Woman fan, and that's got to be a dream project for you to be able to do that. So hopefully that will, you know, eventually
happen
that will
at some point.
Happen at some point. Because I think you'd be, I mean, looking at your work, the Wonder Woman stuff you had put up before, and I mean, I think you'd do an awesome job on that, so hopefully that will happen.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I have my fingers crossed for that, too. I figure, you know, I wanted to sort of, I was hoping to get on from the beginning of Gail's run, because I knew that she wanted to be on for a while, and I thought, you know, it'd be nice to have the same creative team on it for a really decent chunk of time. And, you know, if there was going to be a bit of a shake-up with the creative team, I just figured, you know, now's a good opportunity to try and get in, but they already had, they're really happy with their art team, so they weren't about to stick me on it, and Mike wasn't about to let me go from Birds of Prey just yet, and so I'm sort of, you know, I hope it's somewhere down the track, but now, I want, when the opportunity comes up, I want it to be a long-term option. I don't want to find myself doing a fill-in issue or two.
Sure.
I Wonder Woman, I want it to be mine for a bit.
Yeah. Well, how's it been? You had said you just finished up with the first Sean McKeever issue of Birds of Prey. How's Sean doing following in Gail's footsteps?
Really good, actually. I've got the next script as well, and so I can kind of see where it's going. And it's different. It starts off with a very sort of traditional style Birds of Prey mission that goes awry, like, you know, you expect it to. But it's kind of really surprising, the outcome, and it's a little dark. But he's got the voices of the characters down perfect. And there's so much in these scripts. That's the thing that's kind of amazed me, is the scripts that I've read so far. I keep thinking, you know, when I'm like, up to about page 17, I keep thinking, oh, this must be the final scene, because there's been so much before it, and then I look at the page number, and it's like 17, I'm like, Jesus, there's more, wow, there's more. He's just sort of packing in quite a lot of action and drama and quite a bit of humor, and it's, I'm really looking forward to seeing, like, the first issue, kind of reassembles the birds, sticks them in a mission, and then is, which results in kind of the catalyst of where, what I imagine is his long-term story arc is going to go. And so I'm really kind of curious to see the results of all of this now.
Do you find Sean McKeever's natural writing voice is that of a woman?
a teenage girl,
do you find that sustainable? If you were just to read, let's say, like a diary, it would read like a woman.
He's extremely comfortable with it, isn't he? he does have a good grasp.
We'll leave it at that.
Talking about, I mean, about being a woman in comics, and comic book fans love nothing more than making a huge deal about the fact that, you know, there's so few women that read comics. There's even less women that work in comics. And it always seems like whenever there is a woman like yourself or like Gail that do work in the industry, oftentimes a conversation with them turns into nothing more than the fact that they're an oddity.
What's
in
it
this
like
industry.
To be a woman working in comics?
Yeah, but
yeah.
Do you feel any...
What's your answer to that?
Do you feel any, I guess, pressure about working on Birds of Prey and trying to keep that to a certain, I don't know, I mean, sensibility? Or do you just feel anything... Do you think you would feel any different working on a book that isn't Birds of Prey?
Look, I am really glad that my first opportunity in sort of mainstream superhero comics is working on a girl book, just because that's kind of my comfort zone. And so it's sort of, you know, I feel like my art style's still developing a bit. And so I'm glad to be able to have that opportunity for now, but I don't really want to be stuck here forever, or I don't want to be limited to this forever. So, you know, I'm really grateful when a male character turns up in our books, just because it's an opportunity to show that I can draw them. It's definitely kind of, being a girl in the biz has kind of changed my art style a little bit. On purpose. By design. One of the first people that I spoke to when I first went to the States, and I was quizzing people in the industry about what kind of work was out there and what they thought of my artwork and such. And this was in no way meant to be like a put down or anything. It was just sort of like it was just a fact that he was stating and making me aware of. Was that, you know, generally in superhero comics, boys and girls draw differently. Boys draw with harder angles and more blacks, and girls draw sort of more beautiful. And there wasn't a lot in the way of, a history of girls working on superhero comics at the time. That he could reference, but you know, there are a few that I could think of, and I was thinking, oh yeah, I can kind of picture that. And at the time, that kind of started flavoring my work. I started on purpose sort of thinking, okay, I don't want to be limited to girl titles because I draw pretty, and I don't want to not get a job just because, I draw too much like a girl, even though it sort of didn't quite, like, I kind of got it, and it wasn't insulting. It was just sort of, it was kind of a bit of a fact. Even though I can think of a number of guys that I thought my art style was quite like, you know, my artwork was considerably more like someone like Terry Dodson, than, my artwork is now. But that's kind of because I've started looking at the artwork of people that I sort of feel like I get it and I appreciate it and I like it, and it's similar to what I'm trying to do, but it's quite obviously a little more masculine in its approach to the characters, and the action and the drama. And I've just sort of been trying to learn a bit from those people and try to sort of let that seep into my own style a little bit. I now found myself putting quite a bit more black on the page, and I've got to go for sort of slightly harder lines, especially when I'm drawing a male character. But at the same time, I don't want to lose the fact that, you know, one of the things that I should consider I have going for me is that because I'm a girl, I should be able to see things a little bit differently, or approach the characters a little bit differently. Hence, I don't put, you know, enormous boobs on all of my chicks, or, you know, ridiculously skinny waists or rubber spines.
Damn you!
But you would if it was necessary for the storytelling, right?
If I'm drawing Power Girl, which I've actually drawn a couple of times, I give her huge boobs because she's got huge boobs.
Yeah, that's how she rolls.
You know, when I'm drawing like a teenage character or
Misfit isn't going to get the big boobs.
Yeah.
Whatever. I'm not giving huge big round boobies. I'm giving them sort of little girl boobies.
There's that weird thing where all the characters, like people tend to draw them all the same age. Sometimes, the Justice Society, for 50-year-old guys, are kind of drawn as 20-year-old guys with gray hair.
That's Scotty's thing with doing new X-Men, is that these are all,
teenagers.
14, 15, 16-year-old kids, and that's...
They shouldn't be ripped.
There's only one size clothing in comic book world.
This is David Peterson, creator of Mouthstard, and you're listening to Around Comics.
We do have some questions from the forum, and the first one is from Felt Martin. It says, Chris, please ask Nicola to look into her crystal ball and tell us if she is still going to work on Queen and Country in the future. When I heard the plan was originally for her to take over the art for the start of Volume 2, I was really looking forward to it. I know that now it's a long way away, but will she still be working on it in the future?
I don't know. It will really kind of be up to Greg when the time comes.
And he's always right.
You know, it'd make me pretty happy.
Awesome.
It would make Chris happy, too.
I would be pretty overjoyed with that.
I'd just be happy to have it come out.
Yeah, here's a piece of news for you. I just signed exclusive with DC last week.
Wow.
So if I'm not still tied to that, and if all the scripts are in and he wants me to, then, I'll sort of, if it's one story arc, I can do that in a couple of months, and I'd love to.
Well, congratulations on your exclusive. That's great news.
You drive a Thank hard you. Bargain.
Mm-hmm. We can't be friends now. We're enemies.
you should see Mike and Scotty thumb wrestle
every
week.
He punches me every time I show up.
He's my arch nemesis.
You're such a company man. Such a company boy.
Me, of all people. Yeah. I'm such a diehard company man.
The next question is from Dan C. He said, in a past interview, you've mentioned being influenced by animation and by artists like George Perez and Kevin Maguire. So what animations made the biggest impact? And I can definitely see the Maguire influence in your work. What was it about his work that inspired you?
The primary animation, I would say, was Battle of the Planets. I grew up on that, and I loved that show when I was a kid. And I used to record it and freeze frame it on the action, and that was kind of where I started learning how to do dynamic figure posing. Was from that cartoon. It was so sort of fast and phonetic and great looking that was sort of a big buzz. And what was the second bit about Kevin Maguire?
What was it
about his artwork?
Yes.
Influenced me. I think it was the fact that he added quite a lot of humor to his characters and gave them some sort of realistic facial expressions, and everyone seemed sort of well-rounded and like a fully three-dimensional character without him adding heaps of, detail, heaps of line work, heaps of, blacks and such. I just sort of, it was... When I was starting off, he was, one of the artists I could remember from the 80s that I just sort of thought that was cool. I liked that a lot.
I was going to say, in your last issue of Birds of Prey, you drew sort of how I would imagine Kevin Maguire would have drawn Green Arrow in the scenes with Batgirl, and just the funny facial expressions, just with the silly fucking facial hair, the dirty old man with the silly facial hair. And when I saw that question, I immediately thought of that, because just like he does, you get across a lot of such great facial expressions with humor. And how it doesn't have to be big, necessarily always silly, cartoony, but you get enough across like that. So that I just wanted to add that for some reason. It's not really a question. It's a comment.
Question?
Question? Yeah, I'll put a question mark. It's not a sermon, just a thought.
One of the things that I love about people that have a cartoony style is the freedom that it gives you to be bigger than life with your expressions and your body language and such. And what I've always found, like, one of the challenges and one of the things that I find really fun to do is trying to sort of interpret that kind of extreme exaggeration and body language and expression and such, but in a sort of slightly more realistic style. You know, I don't think I've got an overly realistic style, but it's kind of, you know, it's like that halfway point. And that's one of the things that I like to do the most.
Cool. We got a question here from Chris Chavez. I mean, there's a lot of questions, but I think that a lot of them have been questions that we've kind of already went over with you. But this is a pretty good one. What does your typical workday consist of? How or what do you do in order to keep your art feeling vibrant and fresh?
typical workday. I get up pretty early, and you know, I shower and put my pajamas on, which I work in all day. And I have my breakfast while I'm, like, doing my emailing, because it's kind of, when I'm having breakfast, it's kind of like the last half an hour of office time in the States the day before. And so, you know, if I've got any emails that have come in that are about questions that I need to answer, then I can get back to people before they leave the office. Really, I just sort of, I don't know, I when I'm drawing the script, I come up with ideas in my head when I read through the scripts initially, and then when I read through them a second time, I sort of think about it in my head, what the layout will be, without actually thumbnailing it at the time, but I'll sort of labor on each page, and I don't actually thumbnail the page until I'm drawing the page. So I'll thumbnail the page I'm drawing that day, I'll thumbnail it in the morning. And a lot of it is just coming from the memory of the idea that I came up with when I was giving it the second read-through. But by this stage, I've kind of got a bit more context behind me. I've fleshed out the ideas a bit more from the previous pages that I have completed. And by lunchtime, I should be halfway through the finished page.
Cool.
And that's just kind of how I draw each day, and I tend to finish by about 5 o'clock. And I figure if I haven't finished my page by the end of the day, then I leave it and I move on to the next page the next day. And then I'll just have a catch-up day at the end of the week, or, you know, once every 2 weeks. But that tends to be enough.
Wow, that's very weird.
It is. Okay. Well, most people thumbnail the whole issue right at the beginning before they start on any of the finished pages.
Well, I know, I think that...
But I find when I have done that previously, I keep changing my mind. And so it's like, okay, I want to have really thought about what I want to do for each page. And I suppose I could just thumbnail it at the beginning.
Right.
And then just re-thumbnail each day as I see changes necessary. But I just don't.
No, I think I found, I think people thumbnailing a whole book or not thumbnailing the whole book is, I don't find that to be strange at all, but the leaving a page until not finish it, that, you are the first one I've heard of that one. That's interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'll do that.
Do you do that as well?
Yeah.
Well, just sort of, I feel like my storytelling is kind of clearer in my head if I do it like that, which doesn't really kind of make logical sense, but it kind of works for me.
I have a weird OCD about, like, the page itself. Like, I can't...
Gotta finish the page.
I cannot move on to anything else until that last panel's done. It's weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I figured I start getting bogged down, especially if there's something that's kind of boring to draw or repetitive to draw, or I just sort of, I'm not in that right headspace to do a full detailed cityscape background kind of thing. Just better to keep moving.
Yeah,
so
that's
I just keep moving, and then if I need to go back, then I go back. Mm. And I actually find that some of the best stuff that I do is when I go back.
Mm. Cool.
I've got one message and one question. a message is from Angela, who wanted us to thank you for the wonderful Wonder Woman sketch that you did for her in San Diego, and she showed that off online. It was a great sketch, so she said thank you for that. And my question is, are we ever allowed to change the intro music to the show?
You can, but it's got to be something kind of jazzy that I can have a bop around to, because it totally perks me up, that music. It's very, it reminds me of like a really sort of silly 50s, 60s film where, you know, the good kids go to a beatnik bar.
I actually think that was the film it was from.
Cool and swinging music, I like it.
Yeah, you ruined
it. But you can change it.
You ruined us.
No.
Whenever you sent that email and said, I do a little dance every time I hear the song, Sal's like, yep, we're never changing it.
Uh-uh.
It's done.
I got your back.
Nicola, is there any, but I mean, you already gave us the big news about the DC exclusive. Is there anything else that you have coming out or that you would like to talk about before we wrap up here?
Yeah, I do actually have something coming out through Silent Devil. It's a book called Halloween Man Super Deformed. Halloween Man is a webcomic that I've been working on kind of since I first started drawing comics. So, and this book that's coming out is like an anthology of all the stories that I've worked on with the creator and writer, Drew Edwards. And so it's when I look at it, it's like a really interesting progression of my career, because you can see in the first stories that I was doing that I didn't know what I was doing. And it's kind of progressed along from there. And I think the most recent thing I did for them was about a year ago. And it's just one of those jobs that I've always said to him, you know, if you've got something short that's coming up and I've got the time to do it, then I'll absolutely do it for you. And I've been working with him for free since the beginning. And it's a lot of fun. It's like a sort of retro, goth, horror, comedy, romance, sci-fi book with zombies.
When is that coming out?
It's coming out in October for Halloween.
Cool.
All right.
Well, tell Sean McKeever that...
Keep your eyes peeled for that one.
Tell Sean McKeever that we miss him.
All right, well, Nicola, it has been a lot of fun, and I'm glad after weeks of trying to get through to Australia, we're finally able to connect with
you. She's in New Jersey. The whole Australia thing.
Yeah, thanks for persisting. I'm sorry it was such a hassle.
Oh no, it was. Did you happen to hear the little Easter egg at the end of our last episode?
Yes, I did. That was really funny.
What was it?
I
laughed and I felt guilty, and then I laughed some more.
I added it at the very end of our last episode. I added in the phone.
Don't tell
call
anyone
to the wrong number.
Oh, I don't care. I'm American.
Yeah. Chris goes, I'm American.
I don't care. There's no Nicola here.
Fuck off, mate.
I probably thought it was an APEC related invasion.
Well, Nicola, thank you so much, and I'm sure this will just be the first of many times that we talk with you. So thanks.
That's
for...
That's a pleasure, guys. Thanks for calling.
All right. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Will do. Take care, everyone.
All right.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye now.
And we'd like to thank Nicola Scott for joining us tonight.
You're really nice. Great. She was nice. She was very nice.
Let's stop it. He has a problem.
She's,
he needs hugs.
She's too damn cool. She draws comics. She's funny.
I like the
tried
idea.
Tried out for the Wonder Woman role.
Dig superheroes.
I like the idea that at some point.
I got a crush forming.
Nicola Scott crush, yeah.
I like the idea that at some point she's just like, oh, I'm going to draw comic books. And then she just went and bought a bunch of comic books.
Oh, this is how it's done. And
so
just sat down and drew, yeah.
Why haven't I picked that up from the fucking long boxes of shit I bought? I cannot draw anything.
This is true.
Me, yeah.
I've seen
and
it.
And I've not tried, really.
Well, then how do you know?
You could be amazing.
You just feel
my
it.
My dad taught me when I was young, if I cannot excel immediately,
then shut the fuck up,
Rob. Don't do
you.
It. Or don't, yeah. Don't
well,
try.
Put the cigar
stop.
Out on your arm.
Yeah. Stop. If you cannot be the best immediately, stop.
So you went into accounting.
Yeah. I went into accounting.
You excelled
I'm pretty good at numbers.
Pretty damn good at it.
If Michael Bay ever makes a movie about accounting, it will be Tom. He'll model that because it's always the best of the
Bruce
best.
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, and there's oftentimes when I get up from my desk, there's a camera spinning around me as I look around at the
and all the concrete floors are wet.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's the best of the best deep core drillers
right.
from Armageddon, yeah. and Tom would be the best of the best at
accounting. Because, taxes, obviously, tax. If you're going to drill a hole into an asteroid, the only people qualified to do it are a ragtag group of oil
yes.
drillers.
Yes.
That only makes sense.
Yep. Of course.
We'll save this for another
the Earth's
time.
Last yeah. All right. Well, once again, I want to thank Nicola for joining us.
She sews her own Wonder Woman costumes, which I don't know about you.
You know, I will. I'm going to applaud real quick the fact that somebody on the show is finally having a crush on the opposite sex.
Yeah.
Finally.
What are you talking
that's
about?
A good point.
I mean, we're finally getting
not
to where we're
hang up on you. Chris, because
well,
like
I have
the
man crush on
like
Jeff
them.
Johns. We've just never talked to Jeff Johns, so it's never.
But
really
we're
up.
Slowly getting to the point that men.
Hey, if more women drew
women.
Comics, it would be a little easier. For
I like
us,
yeah. you know? I like the direction.
If
this
Jeff
going
Johns
going.
Was a woman, it would be more comfortable. He's not. All right, I just deal with what I have. If my girlfriend wrote Booster Gold, that would be perfect. She didn't. All right, Jeff Johns did, so I got to deal with that.
All right. Well, another thing we have to deal with is some listener emails.
Oh my goodness, we do have some.
Let's
listener emails.
Let's hear some of these.
All right, first one's from John. John said, "Just listen to the trades versus singles episode. The problem I have with trades is by the time the trade comes out, I have already seen or heard the ending of the story. So I hate waiting for the trade. The other problem is now that
you
can tell
too much.
The other problem is now that you can tell a story." That now that you can tell a story is being written for a trade. Some stories shouldn't be so long, and you can tell they are drawing them out so they can put it out in trade. I am real torn on the whole thing. You guys are the best. Love your podcast. John.
John, you're wrong. Sorry, buddy.
John, you're right. I agree
kidding,
with you.
Kidding,
well,
kidding.
That's one of the things that I kind of dealt with determining that I wanted to read trades or most everything in trades
getting
is like
over that weekly fix.
Well, it wasn't that so much, but it's like because of the show and everything, it's like I pay so much attention to the comic book news and what's going on and previews and all that crap that there are going to be times where I'm going to know the ending to a story before I read it, but you
it's,
know,
it's pretty
whatever.
Easy
I
once
mean,
you get used to it, it's pretty easy to know what
to stay away,
to stay away from and
yeah.
not pay attention to.
My biggest problem is that I keep telling myself, just like, you know what, I'm going to cut back a little bit, I'm going to go to trades, and then I come in here every Wednesday night, and I'm just like, ooh, that looks cool, and I end up walking out of here with 15 bucks.
It's a euphemism for drinking.
Like, that looks
15
great,
bucks,
great.
Wink.
That looks delicious.
Wink, wink. Yeah, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, no, I mean, nobody's right or wrong in the situation. I mean, it's just your preference, you know?
Mm-hmm. For me, it's just money and space.
Do what you want to do. I mean, if you want to be communist, that's cool.
Yeah, if you hate America.
Yeah.
If you hate freedom, go ahead and ring single
right.
issues.
Well, here's one for Scotty, and this is from Lenny. It says, what's up, fan men? This is a question for the oh-so-versatile Scotty Young. Any chance you're looking to hire or work with / teach an aspiring comic artist? You know, a chance of your own to pawn off the tedious crap you hate doing on someone who's so eager to work with you that they'll do it with a smile, just so they can learn from a master. Well, if so, I'm your man.
Well, he's got the flattery.
Were we just
now.
Talking about this?
Well, we were talking about it because I read that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, sure. I have about 1,500 CDs need to be put in my iTunes.
Dude, I'm having a really hard time keeping up, so you need to... This is part of why Scotty and I hate each other, because he knows I'm sandbagging it. I'm putting this
thick of
CDs and
yeah.
iTunes.
Yeah. No, I don't know. It definitely could be a possibility. I mean, I've had people offer it before that have wanted to do it. At the time, I wasn't overly busy with comic book work. I was doing more stuff in animation. I didn't really need something like that. But, I mean, I've entertained the thought before. I mean, definitely there's a lot of extra stuff that I think could be done that could leave room for more drawing and help, and I think show other, like, aspiring artists that doing this is not just about drawing.
Yeah. A lot of people think that you're 8 hours a day at the drawing
yeah.
table.
I mean, people gotta remember that there is the... You know, the hours and hours you have to spend clearing your computer of the... I mean, for me especially, I mean...
Porn.
Porn. I don't clear that. That stays right where the fuck it...
Organizing. Email correspondence.
Well, there's email correspondence. There's, I mean, gigs and gigs of files on your computer that, you know, at some point you have to get these files off and back them up and things like that. And these are all part of, I mean, office work. There's clerical work to do when you're a comic book artist.
Right. You're running your own business.
Either one of you guys or both of you keep an artist morgue, you know, a collection, whether it's digital or a paper morgue of, you know, scenes or different poses, that kind of stuff. That's
digitally now, maybe. I mean, there's really no reason to have a morgue as traditionally used to be.
When we talked to Gene Colan, he used to have, you know, like drawers and drawers.
The way they used to do it, but... The way the internet has completely annihilated that.
Right.
I mean,
Google
bookmarks. I have lots of bookmarks.
Okay.
But other than that,
I will do it for the. I don't do it for everything, but certain things, buildings. You know, if like certain like reference things that you use over and over and over. So if I found four or five really good photos of different, you know,
cityscapes
or 10 photos of cityscapes,
or
I'll have certain generic folders like city photos, sky photos, or certain things that I'm gonna that I know that I'm gonna use. Our color palette.
Well, I need to get those.
Things that are, or I'll find cool color palettes that I'll be able to use in colors or covers and whatnot. So, but nothing to the extent where file cabinets and file cabinets filled with references.
Yeah, just because it's so readily available. Yeah. I usually delete
Google
the stuff
search.
Right after I've used it. So.
Going back to the intern thing, do you guys know, I mean, does that sort of thing happen anymore a lot? I mean, I know, hearing stories and interviews and stuff with, you know, older creators, you had, you know, the guys that worked in, like, studios and bullpen systems. Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of that where younger artists would learn from more experienced artists. But now it's like so many people are working, you know, from home that you don't – you have those situations.
I think you hear more on the writing side that, you know, this guy was an intern at the – it's like Justin Gray was an intern at DC, wasn't he?
I mean, most – I mean, I look at most of the interns. Tim was an intern.
Seeley was an intern intern
at Marvel. I mean, there's a lot of interns that end up becoming editors or, you know, associate editors and stuff at companies. I mean, I don't know anybody artist-wise who's pulled one up. I guess it would really just depend on – the amount of work that you have and the amount of responsibilities that you have. I mean, for me, you know, sometimes juggling the comic book work with design work and animation or whatever, I mean, sometimes you do get frustrated with the day and like, oh my, I also need to clean my house when I, you know, I need to leave enough time at the end of the day to do real life stuff. So maybe if my day, even if I could save 2 hours by having someone learn some of this, and sometimes I mean just having a person around watching you, they can pick up a lot of
what you're doing,
the art stuff and things like that. So I mean, I don't know, maybe I'll
have
keep
someone make
guys.
Love to your girlfriend when
when you're too tired.
Yeah,
too
tired.
Just go do it.
Here's how we roll.
All right, Tom,
next
last email
for the day.
This is from Ike. What gets me looking up at the ceiling and pondering the universe? Hearing Scotty talk about the anti-establishment rage concert he went to and his love for Super Walmart in the same sentence. Yeah, but what? Isn't that like calling Dick Cheney an asshole bigot while checking your oil stocks? Well, that would be like while buying your oil stocks. Or voting for him, I guess. Or saying fuck you to Stan Lee while wearing a Spider-Man t-shirt. Mm. Well, as long as you bought the Spider-Man t-shirt,
Steve
I think
Ditko.
Stan Lee would be cool. Glad Sal and Scotty are back. Chris and Tom are fucking boring without you.
Oh,
and Thomas forbidden from eating during podcasts from now on. My doctor prescribes that I eat during. Dude, you chewed your way right through the microphone, and I did. So anyway, love the show. I love you guys. Love the ghost of John Centris, and Scotty spells his name fucking weird. You guys rock. Peace out.
You know what?
I can have it's the weird mix of hate and love.
Yeah,
how many
I just
backhanded
see hate?
Compliments can
yeah,
you
I
put?
I don't like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Okay, check this out, bipolar Ike. don't hate on me because I have many layers like an onion.
Yeah.
Right. There's many layers of Scotty. I can
onions
hate the machine.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're fucking delicious on a hamburger.
Yes.
Like Scotty is.
I can.
I usually pick them up.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Just because I can rage against a machine and also can shop at Walmart. You know why?
in the same hour.
Low prices.
At the same time.
Yeah, because always, right? There's always low prices at Walmart.
In fact, I know for a fact that while you were raging against the machine, you were thinking
about
shopping
and
at
Walmart.
You
know what's a funny thing about that militant fucking man rage against the machine? Guess where I got my rage shirt at? Walmart.
Hey, I bet rage against the machine.
There's no reason why you should pay high prices for your revolution. No.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah, exactly. The revolution... the bad thing is Walmart's putting all the small mom and pop revolutions out of business.
Right. Right.
And they're selling a bigger revolution for
industrialists.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I want to know how this realist Ike sent us this information.
You fucked up now, Ike.
The machine.
The real question,
Walmart.com. So.
The real question though to me in this is the fact that obviously, Walmart isn't anti-establishment, so is Rage Against the Machine sort of sellouts?
Oh.
I just pissed some people off.
Shit. You're going to have the communists on your ass.
Oh, no. Susquito.
Yeah. I'm sure those guys are real communists. Tom Morello will come beat me with a gold populist guitar.
we got a bunch of other emails here, but a lot of them will take long, we'll get back to them.
We had a lot of emails about the trades versus singles episode, yeah. And
some guy begging me not to
stop buying
single issues.
That was Mark Beatty.
Please.
All right, well, I tell you, we will bump those
don't lose them.
We will get to them.
Neesman.
We try and promise. It was pretty non-committal. All right, well, I tell you what, let's wrap this puppy up. Just a couple of announcements here. The 24-hour podcast is coming. Talked about it last week and on Monday, October 6th, starting at 11 o'clock in the morning.
I'll be
Saturday.
Saturday.
What did I say?
Monday.
Holy
shit. Jesus. I'm not doing that.
It'll start on Saturday the 6th.
And go till Monday.
At 11
I'll be
o'clock.
Wearing at least a suit. That's the most casual I'll be, is be wearing a fine Italian suit. I might wear
a wardrobe for
and
this.
And it will, throughout the day,
I'm bringing a change of clothes.
So look for that. More details come, and that'll be on the 6th into the 7th. You can join our Friends of the Program.
Go to aroundcomics.com, where you can download and print out the LCS Challenge flyer. Ask your comic shop manager or owner if they'll display it in the store. If they do, send us an email. We'll mention you and the store on the show, as well as post a link to it on our site. Become a Friend of the Program today.
If you want to use your computer to go online and, like, touch my privates, you can. I mean, touch...
webcams.
Chris's privates.
If you want to go to the iTunes Store.
Yeah, go to the iTunes Store. Go to iTunes Store and touch my privates by leaving...
A review.
And these are reviews since we had Nicola on this week. These are all of our Australian reviews.
Oi, oi, oi! Aussie!
Thank you to Lee Webb, Lord Flashheart, Seaman, Rebo Kesh, Miatch. That sounds like Biatch.
19,
and Super Harmon.
Rebo Kesh sounds like a Star Wars character.
Rebo Kesh.
I was captured by Rebo Kesh.
He's a bounty hunter.
Oh, hey. If you want to see more of this sort of humor, check out the website.
Our forum.
It's less funny. It's more static.
It's a little more dry.
We post next week's topic on Tuesdays, if we feel like it, at the forum at aroundcomics.com. And remember, you can also visit us at ComicSpace and MySpace, but why would you?
Leave us a cool comment.
Do we have a Facebook yet?
No, we're not
getting
one.
Stop with all this social
networking.
All
this extra shit.
Yeah. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. You can find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com.
And thank you to InStockTrades.com for sponsoring this episode. Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers,
essentials,
showcases, archives, excellent editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
Essential!
We're proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates an essential safety net for yesterday's creators who need emergency essential medical aid, financial support for essential supplies, and an avenue back into essential paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give something back to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. We just love them.
Yeah. Don't stop.
For more information, go to heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809.
It is an essential charity.
That was one too many.
What? Shit.
You gotta fuck it up, Chris.
I'd like to thank Mr. Mark Beatty for hosting us here at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles
for another
Friday evening. I'd like to thank everyone on the live cam tonight.
Thank you, Cam.
I had a lot of fun with them. For Mr. Mike Norton.
Thank you, Mike Norton. Thank you, Scotty Young.
Brian Salazar.
Thank you, me.
Tom Cater.
My pleasure.
I'm Christopher Niesman. Enjoy the rest of your week and weekend. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere
in and around
the Betty Ford comics.
12 steps.
Hey, a little bourbon never hurt anyone.
First step is a meeting
it's
you
essential.
Have.
It's essential. It's essential.
Would like to suggest a topic? Send us your comments or are interested in becoming a panel member? Email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Love you, baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my left alone? I know that you don't love me. Oh, baby, what is going on? Let me, oh, let me, baby, love you one more time.
Sure.
It's all extra large and
you
skin
have
tight.
78 cents remaining.
Oh!
You can enter the telephone number you wish to dial now, or to get the latest in news, sports, and movie listings, press star.
You still there?
We lost her.
Card ran out. I had to run across the street to 7-Eleven, and then we kept like getting, we kept getting Spanish people on the line and all that.
Donde está?
Donde está?
It was Earth ESP where everyone speaks in Spanish.
How the fuck is stump?